I'll just read the last page. The second to the last page, I'll just read the motion on variance of suspension. Whereas on March 9th, 2005, a majority of members of the WBAILD voted to suspend listener Paul Darienzo for a period of 6 months, alleged severe continued disruption to WBAI board. Whereas more than 1 year has passed since such suspension, and Mr. Darienzo has still not been afforded his local station board voting and participation rights as a duly elected delegate pursuant to Article 7, Section 2 of the Foundation bylaws. Whereas a majority of the WBAI LSB has demanded what amounts to a loyalty oath for views from Mr. Darienzo in order to regain his right to LSB participation, effectively disenfranchising the membership constituency that he was elected to represent in violation of the principles of proportional representation embodied in Pacifica's electoral process. And whereas neither Pacifica's bylaws nor Robert's rules support the suspension for multiple meetings enacted by WBAI LSB. Therefore, be it resolved, 1, that Paul Darienzo's rights to participate as a member of the local station board are fully and unconditionally restored. 2, that no delegate suspensions are to be made by any LSB except for the remainder of a specific meeting where multiple violations of decorum by the member have occurred and have been ordered noted in the meeting minutes. 3, that all apologies are to be demanded of delegates as a disciplinary measure beyond a simple apology for offending the body. And 4, that the PMB affirms that free speech shall be protected in its governance meeting as limited only by the requirements of decorum outlined in the Foundation's parliamentary authority. 5, that LSB members shall be provided a fair hearing and an opportunity to be heard before any discipline is applied beyond suspension from a single meeting where objectionable conduct has occurred and been ordered noted in the minutes of the meeting.
As a point of order, I'm going to rule item 2 out of order because the parliamentary authority, Robert's rules, to allow for suspension for a time, so it has to be in the form of a special order.
I will appeal the ruling of the chair. The bylaws, while they subscribe Robert's rules, they supersede Robert's rules, and the bylaws provide only for delegates, not the LSB, but delegates, to remove delegate status as a sanction. They do not provide LSBs to be disciplinary authorities beyond making an order in a meeting.
While I happen to agree with you personally, the governance committee considered that issue when it was originally considered whether the suspension was valid and the board agreed that it was, therefore I have to hold to the ruling of the board on that.
I would really like to see that. I've requested that before, and I haven't had an opportunity to see that ruling. My understanding was the governance committee did not act, but it just simply refused to intervene. I'm mistaken, but I need information.
Okay, I'll look forward to the motions while we proceed, and I'll reverse my decision. Is
May
the debate on the motion?
Make one comment about it.
Yes.
After what we've seen yesterday, you can see that there is a serious high energy around WBAI, and it takes place in the local station board as well. And being on the minority side on the board, there is how this occurred is by somewhat tyranny of the majority, where a person was suspended by a majority vote at a meeting that was not announced. And this has gone on for a year now, and you can see the energy around the factionalized station, and people do speak loudly, and it's speech. It's called speech. And I'm really hoping that people will understand the difference between speech and physical violence and attacks in the workplace and stuff. See that speech, although people could be suspended from a meeting, and I agree with that. I don't agree with the things that he said. I don't agree with a lot of things, but that does not mean we can disenfranchise of members. Thank you.
Opposed? Lisa?
I am very much opposed to this meeting, and I certainly disagree completely. Certainly opposed to this motion, and I certainly do not agree at all in the way in which Ms. Hester characterized what happened. I think the issue of freedom of speech does not give somebody the right to degrade, to curse people out, to yell and be rude and disrespectful. That is part of what happened. I'm describing it very briefly, so I definitely object to the issue of the freedom of speech. But going back to Robert's rules, Robert's motion specifically called, in addition to a 6-month suspension, that you have to issue an apology for his behavior. Robert's rules specifically says that, hold on a second, that a motion offered in a case of this kind could propose that the offender be required to make an apology, that he be censured, that he be required to leave the hall during the remainder of the meeting, or until he be prepared to apologize. He has always said that he was not going to apologize. Not too long ago, he said that, you know, he's not apologizing for his behavior. He has come and repeatedly sat at the table as if he never suspended, basically has even refuses to examine his behavior, whether he has done anything wrong. Basically, has argued that he has not.
Don White?
I am going to vote for this motion, but I do want to make it clear, Lisa and others, that it has, my vote is not based on condoning behavior. I actually am of the opinion that some kind of discipline of this member was appropriate. My vote is going to be based on the constituency that this member represents. The constituency who elected him has been without representation on the WBAILSB for a year. That is punishment. That is discipline. And I fully understand how the behavior created the problem. So I would never try to condone or rationalize the behavior. But I believe that after a year of his constituency not having representation, it's time to reseat this member as a voting member, and hopefully the discipline and the punishment will have effect. People who serve their time come out and hopefully rejoin society. And I might say that I do not think it's appropriate to absolutely force an apology. I understand he did write, "I apologize," on a piece of paper and laid it before people. So I'm going to vote for this to protect the constituency of this elected LSB member in New York.
Opposed.
Are you opposed to that?
I think I'd rather am, because there's no remedy here for... I'm speaking neither for nor against. I guess the problem that I see with this, as it's stated, if he gets reinstated and he behaves again this way, there's nothing. I don't know if an amendment is ordered to say that if he is reinstated at the very next meeting where his behavior continues, he's suspended for the rest of that meeting, and the meeting after that, the same thing, and the meeting after that. So he's. That's what I would like to see.
Such an amendment would not be in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, speaking to the question of an apology, I don't think I would disagree that the LSB does have the right, if his behavior was found to be inappropriate for the meeting, to request an apology. The question here is not whether he has the right to an apology, because the motion before us allows for an apology. The question is the form that an apology must take. And the form of apology being demanded of Mr. D'Urienzo is a political apology. It's not an apology for his behavior. It's an apology for the content of his speech. And that is a free speech issue, unfortunately. And I'm very much opposed to this sort of, I consider it a sort of witch hunt approach. Secondly, if he is reinstated, we were just told there's nothing that can happen if if the behavior is repeated. That's not true. I just argued earlier that the delegates of the station can choose to be at any time with notice to the public and remove his delegate status if they feel that his disruption of the meeting is preventing the LSV from accomplishing its purposes. It's totally within their rights, and the bylaws make that very clear. That is, however, the only way in which his constituency cannot be represented by Paul DiRienzo. That is the only way. And this proposal, this motion, makes extremely clear what the LSVs may or may not do. And I think we've been needing this clarification for a long period of time, and I welcome it.
Okay, just to clarify your question earlier, what happened was the board and the motion is referred to the governance committee in a question of whether it could be legal due to its constituting temporary removal. What happened was the governance committee voted that it did not and did not forward a motion to the PNB on that point. I'm still going to stand by what I said. I still believe it to be a special rule of order, as your interpretation of the bylaws are simply your interpretation of the bylaws, and yet I do not believe it is clear. Robert's rule is clear, allowing for suspensions, and therefore it would need to be a special rule of order to supersede the parliamentary
authority.
There's appeal for the ruling of the chair. All that's not debatable. All those whose corporate...
Point of order, Mr. Chair. An appeal of the ruling of the chair is always debatable. Point of order?
That's ended.
Your appeal requires a second. Is there a second to the appeal of the ruling of the chair?
Second to my appeal.
Hearing none,
if
you want to make a second, I'll allow you to make a second. Hearing no second, it fails. Okay, we're continuing on. We just heard in favor or opposed. Bob? And I just want to let everybody know, if we don't call the question or move to refer, we're going to eat up all the time for new business on this item. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, first, I just wanted to correct the last comment that Dave made. Actually, the governance committee did report out a motion to uphold the suspension, and that was passed by the full PNB. Now, there's several aspects of this. First of all, we absolutely need to separate, and I guess I would move to divide the provisions of this motion related to Paul DiRienzo from the general policy issues for the future. I would just point out that the governance committee is very involved right now in crafting a proposed code of conduct that addresses some of these points here in 2 through 5, although it hasn't happened yet. But so I think it would be totally premature to pass any permanent policies today as the board when the committee is sitting.
So there's a motion to divide. Is there a second? Okay. Maybe go to
the Okay, but then I have more to say on the substantive motion.
Okay, I'll come back to you. So rolling out of it. There we go. Division. A question must be seconded. It is not debatable. It is amendable. It requires a majority vote. All those in favor of dividing, please raise your hand. There was a second. I'm sorry. All those opposed to the division? There were three in favor. Was it four? I'll call for ayes after.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
All those in favor of division, please raise your hand again.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
The motion fails. Okay, we're back to debate, Bob.
Okay, so first, as to the question of the apology, it's the motion passed by the board is calls for an apology for racist, sexist, and anti-Semitic conduct. And that's really the heart of what we're dealing with. This has nothing in common with free speech. Specifically, it has a long tradition of not tolerating racist, sexist, or anti-Semitic conduct on the air. And I think, similarly, our board should not tolerate it as well. We're talking about a person who screamed things like, Sig Heil, you are a fascist, Nazi, when are you going to open BAI's ovens? He taunted an African American board member, Father Lawrence.
Hold on a second. This is not appropriate for public session. you're not allowed to act under Roberts.
This was a motion, I'm reading from a motion passed by LSB in public session.
I don't believe that you can make such claims even if it was done in public.
Point of information, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
This motion, complete motion, has been sitting on the local station board website in total for one year.
Point of information is a question. Point of information is a question. I'm going to rule that you cannot defame the member.
All right. Well, I disagree with that, but I'm just going to go on with my comments. So the point here is that this is not a question of merely disruptive or unruly behavior. This is a question of fundamentally bringing racially and gender and anti-Semitically biased conduct that is something we should tolerate. So I think Robert's rules allows for apologies and an apology for a specific kind of conduct that a board, I think, should stand squarely against is appropriate. And sorry, one second. Okay, that's it.
Sorry, so speaking in favor. The motion is written in favor of your response.
Like a call to question.
Okay.
What was the last motion? What was Robert's speaking?
Robert's
call to question. All those in favor of closing debate, please raise your hand. Closing debate. All those opposed to the closing debate.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
It requires 2/3 of the debate. It's open. We have 13 more
minutes. Point of order, Mr. Chair.
No, second. We have 13 more minutes in the item at which point an extension of time will require 2/3 or we will be acting on the motion. Yes,
Mr. Chair, I don't believe it was appropriate for you to dismiss my request to speak because I'd already spoken once here. Robert's rule permits us to speak twice.
I understand. I was taking somebody who had not spoken yet. I was not saying you could not speak. I was choosing the order in which
you spoke. Who did you choose instead of me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that. Thank you.
Okay, so we're continuing the debate, and we've just heard opposed in favor. Theresa.
I'm in favor just because I think that if what happened was so egregious that they thought that the person should be suspended, then they should have suspended it. But because they did not, and because... Yes, removed. I'm sorry, removed. Which I think would require a 2/3 vote. He also did apologize whether or not people liked the apology or not. And just seems correct that he should be allowed. And I think that Robert's rules for, what's the term? Is it sequential? I mean, if you violate something, you are reprimanded and then some sort of steps to the reprimand.
Progressive discipline.
Thank you. Progressive allows for progressive discipline. If there's further problems with him, I would think that progressive discipline would be appropriate.
Opposed? Lisa, you've spoken. I don't know where I
am. I'd like to point to the fact that the member of the local board, by the way, withdrew his apology, said that he did it against his own best judgment. He was imposed upon him and he withdrew it. So I guess that. Anyway, I think that these discussions clearly need further evaluation and have to move to be referred to the governance committee.
I second the motion.
To refer to governance first. Okay, so I would accept 2 in favor, 2 opposed to the referral. Who's speaking in favor of referring?
Breaking in.
I'm
in favor of referral of this one because, first of all, I would have supported this
motion that the second part would have been taken away. Most of our LFBs, we have tremendous amount of dissension, and the conduct of people in the absence of any kind of code of conduct, whether it's a board or local station board, people can just run really amok. And this will probably give them a sanction to do any kind of behavior, those people who have an activist. So I'm going to say that I'd like to make support this to the governance committee so they can look into all the ramifications of this, and they also work on the code of conduct, and then it will fit right in.
Mr. Chair, it is obvious that the purpose of this motion is to expedite the recovery of his right to represent his constituency of Mr. DeVando, and sending it to the governance committee is a sure way to delay what many of us believe is an overdue restoration of his rights to represent his constituency. Thank you.
Well, this is why I tried to divide it earlier, but in any case, since it's not divided, then what adopting this motion would mean is that the question for finding free speech shall be protected at governance meetings, limited only by issues of decorum, would just be in one fell swoop declared that the most racist, sexist, or anti-Semitic speech and conduct can occur at a board meeting, but if it doesn't breach decorum, if it's directed to someone who's not on the board, it's fine, there's no problem. I mean, this is just one of half a dozen problems with this sweeping new policy that's being imposed without any thought, without any deliberation, the process that we go through on all our other policies, and that in fact there is a working group in progress now from the governance committee working on these very issues, so I think it really has to be referred.
Opposed to referral? Sandy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be in favor of taking this issue up today, here and now. In deference to Mr. Lederer's remarks, I've had a year to deal with this and hasn't been dealt with. And that's why it's here.
Okay, we've heard two unproductive comments. I've been asked by members of the audience who want to comment. If the motion to refer fails, I'll recognize some members from the audience after everyone on the board who wanted to speak has spoken. But right now we're going to vote on the referral. I've taken two pro and two con on the referral. All those in favor of referring, please raise your hand. I'm referring a matter to the governance committee.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
No.
All
those. Ten. Please raise your hand. Please raise it high. Please keep it up until the secretary announces the full count. All those opposed to referral?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
The matter's referred to the governance committee. The next items of new business, we have quite a number of them. We only have 7 minutes left in this item. Teresa, you have them in order, I believe. The ones that have already been submitted in writing. No, new business. I believe Sandy has submitted two things. You can pick which one of those you'd like to put in first, Sandy. And did you have no, you withdrew your motion. Rip has a motion.
Yes, Andrew. I have several motions.
Okay. Can you put the one that's most important to you in writing and get it in the queue?
Rob. I have a motion that Teresa has.
That Teresa has?
You have an OP.
That's the one you just gave me, Rob?
Yeah. Oh, but this is from Robinson, not Rob.
Okay, I have two by Sandy one.
Kind of purple business.
Do you want me to read the first one by Sandy one?
Yes.
Motion that the written reports submitted by GMs from our five stations follow a standard format to be determined by the governance committee. The maker of this motion suggests that the information contained in said reports include, but not be limited to, 1, current cash position, 2, overall expense / revenue actuals as compared to budget, comma, latest fund drive results, comma, special events, e.g. community outreach, comma, exceptional station events / changes. Formatted reports should be filed for our meeting scheduled for June 6th at WBAI.
Is there a second motion?
Second.
There's been a second. Is there a debate or a motion to refer? Oh, it's already it already calls for referral.
That's right.
So it's a motion to refer to the governance committee. So I'll take two pro and two con unless we're ready to vote on it. Go ahead, Stephen.
Just briefly, I've asked for standardization of managers' reports. We receive reports today during the course of this meeting. I think it demands that if written reports are going to be filed in place of oral reports, that the information required to see what's going on in stations is plain.
Opposed to referring? Hearing none, all those in favor of referring the stated motion to governance committee, please raise your hand.
What are we voting on?
The motion is to refer to the governance committee that they develop a standard, a format for GM reports that includes standard information at all times. So there's some consistency of what we get. All those in favor of referring that to governance, please raise your hand.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35,
36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54,
55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64,
65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75, 76, 77, 78, 79, 80,
Right to executive committee minutes by the record of Freeland.
Okay, can you read the motion?
Yes. Whereas Director Freeland has requested of the PND Secretary Teresa Allen access to PND executive minutes, session minutes from January 2005 to January 2006 on February 10th, February 14th, February 22nd, February 28th, and March 1st of this year, documentation provided. And whereas Director Freeland has not received such access, nor a copy of PND special rules, which he has requested since February 22nd, documentation provided. And whereas all directors are legally entitled to access the records of the PND, therefore, be it resolved that the PND admonishes Secretary Allen and or Chair Adelson for failing to respond to this legitimate request in a timely way and directs him or her and him to furnish the requested access to minutes and special rules to Director Freeland within 3 days of the March 2006 PND meeting.
Is there a second?
Well, excuse me, a point of information. I missed something. It calls on doing what to the secretary?
To admonish me and or the chair, Adelson, and for failing to respond to this request, and also directing us to furnish the minutes.
Is there a second? So debate on the question.
Call the question.
Just been a call of the question.
Wait. Did you get it?
Yeah.
I like to motivate the motion.
He called the question, and
you can't call the question before it's been motivated.
Yeah, it's never clear. Been the call of the question.
The maker of the motion should have is normally entitled to the first statement on the motion before it's called.
Okay. All
right, I'll make it brief. I have made several requests since February the 10th for these minutes. These are minutes that I'm legally entitled to. I have been stalled. No explanation has been given to me as to the delay. I have been told the reason why it states admonish the secretary and or chair is that I have a statement from Teresa that Dave Adelson is supposed to be taking up the responsibility, but I have no confirmation from Dave Adelson that he's taking up the responsibility. All I'm asking for is access to those minutes. You heard this morning again why I cannot operate as a director without access to these minutes. I cannot educate myself on past issues that are still before the board without those minutes. I need to be able to read them like every other director here has the right to read them, and I request that they be asked to give me those minutes within 3 days. Thank you.
And I'm going to call on Don first.
Well, very briefly, I actually am willing to vote for this, but I'm not going to vote to admonish the chair and the secretary because I don't have the information before me that they deserve that. So if there's some way that...
Amend the motion.
Well, I'm going to go to Bob. I'm going to ask Bob.
I move to delete the clause about admonishment. Can I motivate it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a very hardworking chair and secretary who are doing their best efforts with good faith to make decisions about how to do the work. We don't need to admonish them for something that can be just solved by handing you the minutes and it's over with. We don't need to treat each other that way.
Is there a second?
My second.
Okay, debate on information. Yeah, actually, we are at time. Go ahead with your point of information.
Is that information readily available?
I was going to say, I don't have any list of special rules where I don't believe we ever passed anything as a special rule order, and I don't have that. Do I have the executive session minutes?
I believe you do, Donna. There are a good number of them because of the ED search. I think there's probably over 20 of them.
I know they've been passed. I just don't remember.
We do have something for Donna Warren with a whole series of tasks.
Okay. There's no time unless you move to extend, but we're at time.
Move to extend for 10 minutes. Second, 5 minutes.
Is there a second? All those in favor of extending for 5 minutes, please raise your hand. Two-thirds, it fails. We're going to act on the pending motion. All those in favor of the amendment to strike the admonishment, do you want to read the exact language, Bob?
Delete the fourth admonishment, that would be...
Can you read the motion as it would exist if it were amended?
Therefore, be it resolved that the chair and or secretary are directed to furnish the requested access to minutes and special rules to Director Freeland within 3 days of the March 2016 meeting.
Okay.
Move to table. Point of order. I was trying to draw a separate amendment.
Move to table.
No, sorry. We don't have any motions in order now. We're at time. There was no extension of time. We're going through a public comment. Is it move the motion to table in order at that time or not?
Thank you.
Got it. Anybody help me out?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Okay, thank you. There's a motion to table. All those in favor of table.
Mr. Chair, a point of order.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, a motion to table means that something has come up that requires the committee's, the board's attention so urgently that we need to take the matter and set it aside. That is not the case here. A motion of order to table is totally out of order at this time, and particularly when we cannot even debate an amendment before us. And here, we're being asked to consider a motion to do something entirely different.
That's right. A motion to table actually moves it to later in the meeting. That's why it's not debatable. A motion to postpone to a certain time or to postpone indefinitely. And I'm not clear that I don't believe it's already close to that. So all those in favor of the motion to amend Kevin's main motion, please, by striking the admonishment, please raise your hand. All those opposed?
Point of information. There was part of this motion was to admonish me. Do I get to say?
So we moved to amend it by striking the admonishment, and now we're at the amended main motion. Does anybody need us to read that again?
No.
Okay, then all those in favor of the amended main motion by Freeland, please raise your hand.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine.
Opposed?
Call for a roll call, vote, please.
Eight,
I need a roll call vote on this. This is a legal matter.
No, was how many, please?
The main motion was 7 yes, 10 no.
Do we have 7?
It was Ken Freeman's main motion.
Okay, motion fails. All right, we are done. No, we are done.
Sure, did you rule on the roll call? The roll call vote with us?
What I'm going to do is check Robert's rules because I don't know the rule on this. And if it turns out it is in order, I will ask for a roll call on that. Good check. Thank you. Okay, so we are now, we have gone, surgeon passed our break, and we are now at the part of the discussion, the reason I am here despite the fact that I can barely keep my eyes open, which is the intellectual property and licensing thematic discussion.
Mr. Chair? Yes. Excuse me, I had another motion that wasn't ready to you.
We're out of new business. There will be time at the end of the finished business to start doing for additional new business, otherwise we'll have to wait for the next meeting. Okay, so thematic discussion on licensing. There are a couple questions. Is Ursula's here? Is Brian DeShazer here, kind of? Brian's here, good. Lonnie, are you in the house? Is Lonnie in the house? Okay, maybe somebody could get him. And so I want to kick this discussion off by just orienting us. As people know, we've been talking with Dr. Lawrence Lessig, and Rob Robinson has arranged for him to speak to the programming committee. And what's at issue here is really who gets to do what with Pacifica programming. And for example, we have a contract now with Democracy Now! That lets Democracy Now! Have essentially complete rights over that programming produced, and we have rights of use. There have been questions raised in the past about whether content produced by volunteers at Pacifica Station is Pacifica's exclusive property or whether Pacifica retains non-exclusive distribution rights, and different people have asserted different things. I won't take a position on it. Most importantly, in the future, as we go forward, we have more and more of a civic media rising, a lot of citizen production of media. The blog space is probably more heavily populated than there are probably more people participating in the blog space than there are listening to our radio stations, which is an example of people hungry for participation. The issues for Pacifica relate to, what will programmers be allowed to do with their programming? Will they be allowed to go out and seek distribution on additional channels of programming they produce with Pacifica resources, or will they be restricted? If they can distribute it, what rights does Pacifica retain? And how are we going to institutionalize the question of licensing rights so that it's very clear to everybody? Because right now, and Lonnie, I assume when he comes back, will speak to this, it's quite unclear. And there's a lot of schtum and drum at the various stations, a lot of struggle over what rights really obtain. One of the things that's being discussed with Dr. Lessig is the idea of creating a sub-archive. He coined the term pod-safe archive. Other people prefer a different term. And the idea would be that he would help us design a license suited to our needs. He would come and meet with us and design a license that would have the dual function of allowing civic uses, allowing people to make derivatives of it, allowing them to distribute it on their own platforms, to do whatever they want, provided that they credit Pacifica, so it gets the name out there. But in the event that people are using it for commercial purposes or non-commercial purposes, but to develop audience to raise money, then a contractual relationship would click in. One of the advantages of this is programming licensed in this way, programmers would be free to develop their own distribution rather than depending on the Pacifica management structure to give the okay to seek that distribution. So I have a 1 8-minute clip and 1 3-minute clip of some of his comments about the desirability of it. Pete Caracas, our IT person, is very familiar with the open source world and issues of licensing and dual types of licensing here. Ursula, since it impacts on affiliates and our relation to affiliates, I've asked to say something about it. Lonnie Hicks from Finance and Brian, who runs the archive, I thought we'd have an open discussion on these ideas. And I'd like to kick it off by playing the clip of Dr. Lessig explaining the rationale for the idea, and then invite each of those people to speak for several minutes, and then have a discussion with the board. So that was the basic outline of this section. Let me go back to you.
Can you set up? So it is. This is a 7-minute clip of Dr. Lessig addressing the program.
Mr. Chairman, may I say something while we're waiting? Can I just make a housekeeping announcement? There were some people who were not here when I took the role for the open session, and you have straggled in and straggled out. And so some of you, I can't keep track of when you arrived. And so I would appreciate it if you are not here for the original roll call, that you kind of touch base with me so I know for the minute so I can mark that.
Okay, the other important thing about the idea of a sub-archive is it's impossible to know what exactly is going to work in this new world and what isn't. And by creating a sub-archive, that means things can be placed in it without placing our entire collection and see how it performs, see the uses of it. One possibility that's been discussed is having a music library of people who will come in and allow us to have the rights to distribute it ourselves commercially, but make it available for anybody who wants to podcast, and thereby providing a resource to the whole civic media, because right now podcasters can't use licensed music. They just can't afford it. So if they come to Pacifica and all that to get music to play on those things, artists were getting exposure. Pacifica was getting credit as the source of that support, we believe, that it could expand our audience. The key point is there is no thing written in stone. There is no proposal before us to do it this way. What Dr. Lessig has agreed to do is meet with us, hear the various competing concerns, and develop a license that meets those concerns. So I hope we can have a constructive discussion rather than I don't like this, but what do I, for people from each perspective, what do I need these licenses to do? So Troy, with that, can you kick it off?
Share some of the ideas we have and the things we've learned a little bit about in the context of creating content on the internet. And I guess the way I focus the conversation is just to think about what is the most exciting new stuff that we've seen produced in the context of media, not just on the internet, since the digital revolution. And in my view, the most interesting, exciting stuff that's produced is stuff that's being produced in a citizen-driven way, where citizens are participating in creating content and sharing their views and ideas with other citizens, and doing that in a way that nobody ever predicted or planned on. And I think this feature of the internet, when you think about blogs and podcasts and everything like that, is the essential feature of what's going to be exciting in the next 10 to 15 years. Let's say, just be humble, let's say in the next 5 years. and in that sense, and the problem for the existing media is how do you be relevant? How do you be maintain relevance in that world? What's the way in which you are part of that creative process rather than competing with that creative process? And I think what we're seeing as people think about that is that they realize that the way to become part of that creative process is to enable their materials to literally become part of that creative process, not in a way that loses its association or affiliation, but in a way that does become useful and valuable to this new form of creative expression. So between the model of producing content that's efficiently spread out there with licenses or rules that say that you can't use this or you can't do anything with this except watch it or consume it exactly as how we say, versus content that's made available to be consumed but also to be reused in ways that make it more valuable to the community of creators, my bet is that the second type of content will be the most exciting kind of content and most valuable kind of content out there. That's an argument that has nothing to do with public values or public values related to public radio. That's an argument just about how to make it in the world where 20 million or 100 million people are creators as opposed to 5 or 6 major producers as creators. Now, I think that argument becomes much stronger, I would think, although, of course, you're experts in this and I'm not, but I would think that argument becomes much stronger when you think about what public radio or public broadcasting is supposed to be about. Obviously, in a world where it's broadcasting using technology of the 1960s, you can't help but be broadcasters in some sense, just like everybody else is broadcasters. But in the world of digital technologies, public broadcasters uniquely have an opportunity to empower this sort of citizen creativity in a way that I think really can take the lead in showing the rest of the world what citizen creativity can be about. So the best example of this, I think, was the lead that the BBC took in England about committing to making their archives accessible for British citizens to remix and to include in their own creativity. That I was, you know, part of the conversations with them when they came to this decision. As they thought about what their mission was, that became an obvious way of delivering their mission, which was not to control what people saw as much as to enable people to be creators and participants of the culture. And I would think that, you know, organizations like Pacifica, at least, would be close to that way of thinking, at least thinking about where our media is going to be in the next 5 years. And so that's why I'm happy to have this conversation. Let me just, it's hard to, in the speaking into the dark like this, to know whether anybody's even still there, but let me just leave it with that, and then I'm happy to take questions or push more in ways that you think it would be useful to push.
Mr. Steve Brown, I have a question which has bothered me for some time. The BBC, which has made its content available in a fairly unrestricted manner, is subsidized. They have no problems about supporting themselves as political. Pacifica is not subsidized, and if it makes its content, which is what it has of value, freely available in archives, let's say on the web, then it loses one of its means of supporting itself so that it can keep generating this information. So do you see some difference between a subsidized organization or a profit-making organization that has other sources of income, like advertising, and Pacifica, which has no other source but people who contribute money, either for membership or to sustain its information-generating abilities?
Yeah, so I think that there are important differences, let's map them more precisely here. What BBC recognized was that they had a huge archive of content that they had already created, and it was just sitting there unused in their archive because the existing rules for getting access to that content required you pay a huge amount of money to get access to it. The consequence of that was it just was never used. And so this was not so much about that they were subsidized to make it, as they realized, as anybody realizes, once it's made and it's just sitting in an archive, it's doing nobody any good. Now, the question then is, I think it relates directly to Pacifica. Obviously, what you need in order to drive attention and willingness to pay money to Pacifica is lots of strong commitment with your audience. Your audience has got to feel like, you know, the way I feel like my public radio stations are things that I support every year. They've got to feel like this is an important thing to them. And one way to be an important thing to them, you might think, is just to be, you know, exclusively distributed in these commercial ways or these quasi-commercial ways over the radio. But I think, you know, what you ought to experiment with is thinking about a second way to become extremely important to your audience, namely a component to your audience's creativity. And as, you know, the audience uses Pacifica stuff in their podcasts or Pacifica stuff in other creativity that they're trying to make and share with others, that Pacifica would, you know, be a much more important member of that community. Now, again, with content you've already produced, it's not like it's a trade-off or substituting for, you know, access to the original content. Instead, what it's doing is enriching, we seem to be enriching the connection you have with your community, broadening it, because, of course, at Pacifica, people can be anywhere in the world, and making a stronger claim to your community when you say, look, we need support, and here's how you can support us. You know, give us money in the following 6 ways.
Okay, that's the end of that. There's another 3-minute clip, but Ken has pointed out that we agreed that we would do public comment at times certain. I was going to ask the public if they would consent to allowing this discussion to go forward. The hope had been that we would hear public comment on these issues, but if the public wants to speak now, they can. I also will have to retire to sleep for a little while, and I will be listening to public comment on the recording. Does the public have any objection to our continuing with this item so that you can have this as something you comment on as well as the other things?
Until what?
This would go for another 30 minutes.
Okay.
Is there any objection from the public? Is there any objection from the board for allowing us to continue? Okay, hearing none, we'll continue. Ken, I'm going to recognize you already. I asked you to be part of this discussion.
I just wanted to make one comment.
Do you have to leave?
No.
Okay.
There's a list here.
Okay, there's a list.
I had asked Ken to make a specific comment on this issue.
You want to be on the
Okay, well, I don't know. There is another clip, and I'm just going to summarize it. And basically, the idea is that you cannot just calculate the revenues you've lost by allowing people to use content you might otherwise have restricted on the basis of the ability to pay. Because you have to count in that if making it unrestricted allows a much larger audience to hear it and make a pitch to them, that when they tend to donate, so they still outstrip the people who would pay if it were restricted. And he gives an example of a company that, or a group that used to charge for books it produced, and then instead it changed to giving them away and allowing other people to print them, and their donations tripled. Having said all this, I'd like to hear from the different people involved in the content thing. Specifically, maybe we could just go Pete, Ursula, and then Brian, if you could take 3, 4, 5 minutes and tell us your thoughts on how licensing affects your work and the distribution issues.
With regards to what Professor Lessing is talking about, open source, a lot of this stuff sounds maybe technical, but just to break it down, sorry, I don't want to go back to the public, but there is an analogy, it's not identical, but there's an analogy between what we did 55 years ago.
He's got to speak into the mic.
There's an analogy between what we did 55 years ago as a network, creating a listener-sponsored model that wasn't commercial, with these efforts on the internet. When you hear GNU, GPL, these are licensing terms, Creative Commons. Creative Commons is similar to what we do in a sense. It's giving it out with the intention that it's an honor system, and if you appreciate the services that, whether it's software or whatever, you in turn support it. That's basically what we do. Again, it's not identical, but there's a very strong parallel in terms of the process that this community operates as well as how we operate. And so I really want to stress that it's not something that I myself am not afraid of up here these things, and I hope that the citizens aren't afraid of these things because they don't understand per se. I don't see it as a radical shift. In fact, I think it's us upgrading how we did things 55 years ago, putting it into the 21st century, connecting it to new technologies and new processes. And like David said, and like Professor Lessing said, I think this is clearly a way to expand. Steve Brown said on the recording that archiving and giving away for free will negatively impact the stations. I disagree. At WBAI, I think, considering how difficult fundraising has been the last couple of years, the last two drives where they've had an archive have been relatively successful, I think, compared to prior drives. I've heard from being at Report to the Listeners where listeners called in after the first archive, after the first drive, after the archive went live, people called into the Report to Listeners and said, I'm going to give because of this. I like this service. Andrea also told me she got many positive comments. So I think, you know, when we're, as I said to the archive, we know we have an archive at BNI where we're broadcasting 100,000 hours plus a month. That's in addition to what we do over the broadcast. It's only a win-win. We leverage it well.
Pete, can you, before you go, talk about the enterprise license for Linux? Linux is an open source piece of software. Will you describe what we talked about the difference between the business-to-business portion of the license and the business-to-consumer?
Exactly. Again, it's not exact it's synonymous, but they're not exactly identical here. Linux is a free to use operating system, and users, the public can access it for free and do what they want with it. However, the programmers do offer a more enterprise level, a more secure, less vulnerable level for consumer use. And again, there's a parallel that we can apply. We give away our content to the audience over the airwaves. We do it with archives now and podcasts. Now, we can provide a more professional grade, hardened enterprise version directly to the business to business, and we do that with the affiliate program. So this concept doesn't necessarily conflict or contradict what we're doing. I just think it helps us identify too clearly our business to business transaction. I don't mean to sound, you know, to give too much business jargon, but there's a B2B interaction we have through our clients, and there's a direct to consumer.
That's called broadcast to broadcast.
Okay, so there we go. So,
Ursula, did you want to talk about it a little, how these issues might impact the affiliates program? And also, what do you need to make it an attractive, to out of any licensing scheme, to have it be attractive to the affiliates?